For argument is Red versus Nolan. Mr. Fox.
Good morning, Your Honors. This case comes to this court from a partial grant of a motion to dismiss and then a subsequent grant of a summary judgment motion. Our client was a probationary deputy sheriff who was constructively terminated from her job for alleged misconduct. And I want to say at the outset that after we litigated this case and we did fairly routine discovery, we pretty easily found that every charge that was leveled against her was clearly and unequivocally not founded. And she wasn't guilty of what she was accused for, and it's pretty plain. And I'll come back to that. On the summary judgment motion, the magistrate judge found that our client didn't have due process rights, and or he felt that her due process wasn't violated. He also found there was no retaliation against her because we couldn't prove a retaliatory motive. In connection with prior to that, on a motion to dismiss, the district court, as part of the granted a motion to dismiss in part, finding that the defendant officer could not be liable in connection with the intentional interference with business relationships claim because there was no evidence that he was part and parcel of the filing of a complaint against our client. Now, in connection with the first issue I want to address is the issue of her resignation. And I want to address that first, because Judge Denlow did not address it in his opinion, although it's raised. And what I want to address in connection with it is how it came to that she voluntarily resigned, the misrepresentations that led to that, and then the impact that had on her, because that's the most straightforward issue in front of this court, I believe. But
if she had no tenure, what difference does it make?
Well, it makes a huge difference, because when she voluntarily resigned, she did so because she was told if she didn't resign, and that's clear testimony, if she didn't resign, she would be fired right then and there.
Well, that was true.
Right. Now, had she not resigned...
They could fire her. They could tell her that, right?
Had she not resigned...
Yeah, but suppose they had the right to fire her, but she didn't have any kind of tenure despite what the contract said. Then...
Well, then, the problem was...
There was no harm to her.
There was, Judge, because...
There wasn't. If they say, look, I'm going to fire you, I can fire you. So I can fire you or I'll let you quit. You take your choice. That becomes a perfectly proper statement if it's true that she has no tenure.
But she would have had tenure 8 days later. I'm sorry, 13 days later. Her 1 year would have been up on November 13th. The meeting where she voluntarily resigns is October 31st. When at the time that she's told, you better resign now, you better resign now or we're going to fire you, the person could not fire her at that moment.
Why not?
Because it has to go up, the findings of the investigator have to go up the chain of command, and it has to get signed off by, among others, the undersheriff and the sheriff. And in fact, through probably a series
of...
Look,
if they want to fire her, they're not going to sit on their rear ends waiting for the year to be up.
But the evidence is that's exactly what happened. And the evidence
it happened
is,
after she resigned.
But they didn't know that, Judge. The evidence is they didn't know that because in the sheriff's, when the sheriff signs off on the termination, which he does on November 21st, which is after her 1 year is off.
That's not the base. That's not a good argument. You're saying that even if they had a right to terminate her because the year wasn't up and they wanted to terminate her, still, because of their bureaucratic machinery, if they hadn't said this to her, she could have waited them out.
That's correct. And she would have been entitled.
That's a good argument.
Judge, she would have been entitled to a miracle hearing.
They want to fire her. They can fire her. There's bureaucratic sand in the wheels, and so they would have had to rush things.
But the evidence is...
I think the argument is lousy.
The evidence is, if you may...
You're making an argument that isn't based on any legal right she has, but on the fact that there's a bureaucratic machinery which makes it difficult for them to enforce this probationary provision.
Regardless, if the bureaucratic machinery is enforced or not, if the bureaucratic machinery permits her to be employed...
Wrong. I think you're totally wrong.
If she's employed more than a year, she has merit board protections. She would not have been fired before the year was up. It's pure and simple. And you may say I'm wrong, Judge, but the...
I don't buy it.
Well, you may say I'm wrong, Your Honor, but the evidence is that the sheriff signs off on November 21st, and in it he says...
It's just a trick you're trying to play. You're saying they can fire her, and the only thing that would impede them would be some bureaucratic stuff, which, of course, they'd attempt to circumvent. They try to speed everything up. It has nothing to do with the merits of the case. It's just trying to take advantage of...
Well,
delay.
Well, likewise, the way they fired had nothing to do with the merits of the reason for firing her either. So I think that goes both ways, Your Honor.
They could fire her for anything, couldn't they?
Well, they couldn't either because she had a contract that she signed.
The contract can't override the statute.
If there's a clear indication...
No, it can't override the statute.
Well, the case law says if there's a clear indication to the contrary.
No, it can't override this. How can you have subordinate officials saying... Look, the legislature says we can't grant tenure to people for a year. We don't care about that. We love these people. We're giving them tenure from the date we hire them. And we need to put in the contract.
Well, even the...
That overrides the legislator?
Even the defendants acknowledge...
That overrides the legislature?
Yes. If there's, according
I
to,
believe that.
According to Illinois case law, the defendants acknowledge that in their brief as well. If there's a clear statement to the contrary... Then it overrides the legislature. She signed a contract, which I'm holding.
Lower-level employees override the legislature.
Well, it's not a lower-level employee, Judge. It's a contract with the county.
Who cares? The county is subject to the Illinois legislature. The legislature says no tenure. The Illinois agencies can't say, well, we don't agree, and we're going to give our people tenure in their contracts. And then they can take that into federal court and enforce it.
Well,
what sense does that make?
Your Honor may not think it makes any sense, but the case law says...
Do you think it makes sense?
If there's a clear statement to the contrary, it makes sense.
Why does it make sense? That is, why are low-level officials permitted to flout the legislation by saying...
Low-level officials in connection with a certain department might have more familiarity with the needs and requirements of that department.
The legislature decides that. Suppose they went to the legislature and they said, don't have this mechanical rule about the one-year probation. We know more about what goes on and our employees, we don't want to have this 1 year. And the legislature says, well... Look, we're making this rule. You're bound by it.
Judge,
I go back and say, oh, they said we're bound by it, but just legislation. So we're going to give these people a contract saying they have tenure from the moment they're hired. And you think that's legal?
Well, Illinois appellate courts have said it's legal.
Well, I don't believe that.
Well, we've cited...
that's ridiculous.
But, Judge, the defendants have cited to the defendants agree with it. They've cited to the same law in the brief. So that's the law that we're dealing with. Illinois law
officials can't override state law unless they're given permission. Now, maybe in some situations they're given permission. Were they given permission here?
They weren't given explicit permission by the legislature, no. But this is the law. The state of the law in Illinois is if there's a clear statement to the contrary, that could happen. I'm just here to indicate what the law says. I'm not misrepresenting the law. She had a contract. Not only did she have a contract, Your Honor, the person who is charged with writing the policies?
Anyway, the contract is ambiguous.
Well, the contract says that you can be terminated for cause.
That's not what the contract says. The contract lists a whole bunch of ways in which you can be terminated, and one of them is for cause, but there are others, right?
Judge, no, I'm looking at the contract right in front of me. The contract that says these conditions are the terms of employment. Number 3 says, I understand that there...
So look at number 5 now.
Right? And I understand that good attendance is critical. That goes to cause.
Sentence after that.
Failure to maintain acceptable attendance is cause for suspension and or termination. That's consistent with...
So failure to maintain acceptable attendance is a ground for termination.
That defines it as a cause. And in the paragraph,
say that it's offered as a different ground for termination.
Well, Judge,
it's not offered as a definition of cause.
Bad attendance is a cause. It says you can be terminated.
It's not offered as a definition of cause. It's not a subsection under 3.
It's not a subsection under 3. And subsection 3 is not qualified in any sense. It doesn't say for cause, and it doesn't say for not cause. It doesn't say it's at-will employment. And, you know, in this day and age, we're 20 years post-employment.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It doesn't
3
say
is about cause.
Judge, even
4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 are not subsections of cause. There are other grounds for termination.
It says unable to maintain acceptable attendance is cause, so that defines a cause.
It doesn't say it is cause.
I just read it.
Where?
Number 5. I understand that good attendance is critical. Failure to maintain acceptable attendance is cause.
Cause for suspension or termination.
Right. And, Judge, we took the deposition of the person who was responsible for writing the policies and auditing the policies to make sure. Part of her job is to audit the policies to make sure they're followed correctly. And at page 19, Your Honor, and at page, well, she says it twice, at page 19 and at page, well, I'll read from page 19 first. Question, okay, and then as the process goes on, somebody makes a complaint, it goes to OPR, Office of Professional Review, and they do an investigation. The purpose of the investigation is to determine whether or not there's cause. Just cause? Answer yes. She says on the previous page.
Now what about paragraph 8? I will abide by the department's general orders and procedures. That includes the business about probation.
Correct. And the business about a probation and all the disciplinary rules and policy which are outlined.
The whole essence of probation is that you're on probation, which means you don't have tenure.
Judge, it doesn't say you have tenure. You don't have rights. You don't have rights to merit board protection. And you don't have rights to progressive discipline policy. But you do have right to be terminated for cause.
To a due process hearing.
Judge, the woman who interprets the policies
testifies. This is, at best, an ambiguous contract.
Could I ask one quick question here before
sure.
time runs out completely? Mr. Fox, given that the plaintiff resigned, what process was she supposed to be due?
Well, under the law,
what was Ms. Nolan supposed to offer her?
Well, she didn't. She misrepresented at the time of the process.
No, she didn't. That was the timing discussion you had with Judge Posner, and I agree with what he said about that. But what was Ms. Nolan supposed to do? Was she supposed to offer a hearing to somebody who just says, "I'm resigning"?
No, she would just say this. You have the right to this. Goes up the command channel review, and you have the right to wait that out. By law, that's what it does. It goes up through terminations. Go up through command channel review.
Okay.
Supposedly, it's reviewed by upper echelon folks.
She should have said to her, "You can wait it out because they won't be able to act on this within a year."
The sheriff is on vacation. He won't be back until the 1 year anniversary is passed.
That's the way the legislation has written the law, is that if you're there for a year, then you have merit board protection.
So she should actually tell this person you can wait it out.
Well, she shouldn't convey an image that she had the right to immediately terminate her. She didn't have that right. She did not have the right she conveyed.
So what should she have said?
She should not have said that.
No, what should she have said?
She should have said, you can voluntarily resign now. If not, it will go up through command channel review, and then they'll decide whether you get terminated or not. Pure and simple.
Well, that's misleading also.
Well, no, it's not.
There's nothing about the waiting it out.
I'm not following Your Honor about that.
You're not actually advising her of her options.
Well,
the key option is waiting it out.
That is an option.
So don't you think it's a duty of Ms. Dolan to say you can wait it out?
You know, I think that comes in the more vague area. I mean, what Ms. Nolan did was represent. I don't know how far she has to go with what she has to disclose. It's not clear from the record. But what is clear is she shouldn't represent that she's going to. She has the right to terminate her right then and there, which she didn't have.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Fox.
Thank you,
Mr. Bowman.
Your Honor, Assistant State's Attorney Jameson Bowman on behalf of the defendant, Sheriff Rosemarie Nolan in Cook County. With regard to the allegation that Ms. Nolan did not voluntarily resign, we would like to first point out that if you look at Judge Castillo's motion to dismiss ruling, actually on page 21, which when he's addressing the intentional infliction of emotional distress count that he dismissed, Judge Castillo states that plaintiff does not allege that Nolan Dart coerced, intimidated, or threatened her in any way. There was never an allegation in the court below that there was coercion by the sheriff or Ms. Nolan regarding her resignation. Likewise, Judge Denlow, that issue was never before Judge Denlow as well. Judge Denlow had a retaliatory discharge, a First Amendment claim, a substantive due process claim, and what Red has tried to do here is to package up a substantive due process argument with sort of
Fox a... correct that the sheriff's office can override the statute and grant tenure to people who are on probation?
We don't think that happened here, Your Honor.
That's not the question.
Yeah, can they do? What about the Kodish case? You familiar with the Kodish case?
Yes, I am familiar with the Kodish.
Can we say the opposite?
Well, on Kodish,
the governs.
Well, on Kodish, the issue was that an employee's rights were essentially removed from that employee by informing the employee that they did not have those rights. The employee in Kodish was not a probationary employee. They had their full tenured rights, and they were told, you don't have tenure, and then they subsequently, therefore, resigned. That's not present here.
You know, the passage in Kodish, which says, whatever the district's own policy may announce about probationary periods, the district's policy is just that, its own policy, and if in violation of Illinois law, it holds no force. Right?
Yes, Your Honor. But the reality is that the contract that was signed and the corresponding general orders support the state statute.
My question is, I was surprised by Mr. Fox's answer. He says that you can make that these people, the sheriff, they can make any contract they want, even if it's in violation of state law. Even if state law says probationary employees can be terminated for any reason, the sheriff can give tenure contractually. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, we don't think that happened. I'm not sure that...
But I don't question whether it's correct.
Well, Your Honor's first statement...
You took the position in your brief that can be done through the clear statement rule in Ertl and other Illinois cases, right?
We do not disagree that a contractual arrangement can be entered into by the employer. But it would have to be done... in conjunction with the state statute. In this case, the contract, it tracks perfectly with the state statute. The general orders state that General Order 3.2A states all probationary employees, persons employed by the department less than 12 months may be summarily terminated by the sheriff.
What you've got is a mess, right? What you've got is a mess with the way the contract is worded. Ms. Nolan's deposition testimony is inconsistent and incoherent. She doesn't understand, or else was not telling the truth, one or the other, about what employment at will means.
Ms. Nolan's testimony is contradictory. Even more of a reason why that testimony cannot then be used to demonstrate that Ms. Red had a legitimate understanding that she had some due process right. Ms. Nolan states, first, she agrees that probationary employees can only be terminated for cause, and then four questions later, she says, but they can be terminated for any reason. So, more importantly, Ms. Red did not have that information when she was making her determination of whether or not she would resign or not. That testimony happens after the fact. Ms. Red stated that Ms. Nolan told her she could be terminated for cause. that is permissive language. It's not an establishment of any sort of a mutually binding agreement that would necessitate Ms. Red's belief that she could only be terminated.
First, the problem here is that the defendants are not the state; they're the sheriff and the city, and I guess detectives are. They don't want to be bound by state law limiting their contractual rights, but I would think the state would be concerned at contracts that grant protections that the state says are not proper. But it's a side issue. I didn't want to interrupt you. Do you have anything further?
If there are no further questions, I'll yield my time to counsel from the city.
Okay, thank you very much, you. Mr. Bowman. Mr. Powell?
May it please the Court, on appeal, the only claim at issue against the city defendants is a claim for intentional interference with a business relationship, which requires, among other things, an allegation that the defendant purposely interfered with the plaintiff's expectancy and prevented it from becoming a valid business relationship. The complaint needs sufficient factual matter to plausibly meet this and the other elements of the claim. The fundamental problem here is that no factual allegation ties Detective Doherty in any way to the filing of charges against plaintiff. And that is what plaintiff herself treats as the cause of her termination or the threat of termination.
Mr. Powell?
Yes.
Under Illinois law, are there any immunities or for state actors in situations like this, state law claims? It seems to me that police officers would be getting sued all the time on this kind of a theory by people who lose their jobs because they got arrested or something like that.
Your Honor, I can't
answer
that. I
confess I'm familiar with Indiana law, which does exclude intentional torts from tort claims.
And I believe that may be the case with Illinois law as well, that there would ordinarily
if
be
that's the case, isn't that a sounder basis than trying to skirmish over exactly how much is pled in the complaint?
Well, Your Honor, I can't say with certainty that there is a tort immunity here. It certainly was not raised below. Whether one would exist under Illinois law is, again, given that there's an intentional tort is alleged, is unclear. But I think that the reason it's clear here.
Sorry, whether it's alleged is unclear?
Excuse
this
me,
is
no.
clearly an intentional tort
yes,
that's being
yes,
alleged.
Yes, correct.
And is this. Oh, okay.
Well, Your Honor, I believe it's so clear under even forgetting Iqbal and Twombly in sufficient factual detail that the plaintiff has pled herself out of court on any claim that Detective Doherty, acting individually on his own, did anything to interfere with the employment relationship. Because, again, her claim is that ASA Weber filed these charges and the charges caused her to be terminated or threatened with termination. And then there's as for a conspiracy claim, possible conspiracy, even before Iqbal and Twombly, this court had made clear there has to be some detail, certainly not what would be required to plead fraud, but for conspiracy, something in the nature of the general purpose of the conspiracy, the parties that are involved, and the approximate date. And this complaint has none of that. So even before Iqbal and Twombly were decided, this complaint would fail to state a claim against the city defendants. If there are no further questions, we ask that the court affirm the district court's judgment.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Powell.
You.
So, Mr. Fox, we'll give you another minute if you'd like.
You know, the only thing I'll say is, and it was just suggested by one of you, that this was a mess in connection with the contracts and Nolan's testimony. And Nolan also testified, and I'm quoting for page 19, question, as I understand it, a probationary employee can only be fired for just cause. Is that correct? Her answer was yes. In addition to many other things she said, if you've got this much confusion about things, this is a motion for summary judgment, and I don't think it's appropriate for a court to take this out of the hands of the jury when you do have so many issues that butt against each other. It is a mess. And
what would a jury do with this?
Well, a jury would have to sort out what the intent.
You can't sort it out. How can a jury sort it out?
Well, you know, it's difficult to sort out, but the jury's going to have to be, under the law, the jury gets presented with all the facts. And where you have facts in dispute, which you have here, you can't decide a summary judgment. That's all I can suggest to this court.
Okay, well, thank you very much to all three parties. And the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.